I'm Sean.
And I'm Mike, and you're listening to
Sean and Mike Take a Hike.
I am also recording.
Welcome to another episode of Sean and Mike Take a Hike. What are we talking about today, Mike?
Today we'd go a little bit on topic or on to kind of go with current, even though, I mean, it's current for as of recording, but may not be current for the listener listening to this. But hiking in the springtime, different dangers or just the different conditions that the trail may present just because of the changing weather and density of the trail, the dirt or the floor. Yeah.
Well, timely, and just like full disclosure for some like behind the scenes information for the listener, this topic kind of came about because Mike and I have started really thinking about our first trip this spring. And so it was like we thought it was good to remind ourselves of like what are some things to consider for springtime, because we don't always go in the spring.
Right.
But like it is a different season to go in. So like normally we go in the summer.
Yeah.
Things are a lot different in the spring, especially in the Midwest. Like, I don't know if it's the same all across the entire country or all across the world, but like springtime in Michigan is way different than summertime in Michigan.
Yeah. Well, and this topic kind of came about too. And I was really happy when you suggested because we just got back from a vacation with the spouses out to Arizona, and we visited the Grand Canyon, and me being a not very well traveled Michigander that has never been to Arizona, didn't know that they got snow. And I mean, I figured in the mountains, sure, you know, but the Grand Canyon, I didn't realize that there would be snow in the Grand Canyon. I didn't realize the elevation was that high for it, all that kind of stuff. So, I mean, we ran into some ladies that were hiking on the trails there, and just like they were recommending snow cleats or what do they call them? The
crampons or whatever.
The crampons or the micro spikes, because there was snow and ice on the trail. And I was completely shocked by seeing that in Arizona. So,
yes. I mean, and I don't know if we're getting ahead of ourselves or whatever, but like that is one of the things that I want to talk about. Like, yes, kind of because of those ladies and bringing that to our attention that that was a thing at the Grand Canyon, but like even just because of them bringing that to our attention, translating that back to the Midwest, you know, like, okay, we're talking about going like probably sometime in April or something, we're going to start our first trip. Like, there very well could be snow on the ground still.
Oh, absolutely.
Here where we're at.
Yeah.
And you and I have not yet had a hiking trip that included even the possibility of snow.
Right.
So, like, that's some good things for us, you and I, Sean and Mike, to think about before we actually set out, too. Like, okay, what gear changes do we need to make? Or what additional clothing do we need to take? Or what are some of those considerations that normally we don't really think about too much?
Right, because we're usually going when it's 60 degrees plus, and there's like zero chance of snow or freezing rain or anything like that. You know?
There's always a chance, you could say, well, but yeah, I mean, the likelihood of something like that. So I guess, where do you want to start with this conversation? I think you and I kind of compared notes before we started. We have similar categories.
Why don't we start with like some different gear that you may need, or essential gear that you may need? This is something that you and I started out with just saying, okay, we're going to need to do some, maybe some water crossings or things like that, or it could rain. So we generally wear waterproof boots, but in the springtime, especially, in the Midwest, you're going to want waterproof shoes or waterproof boots, just so the ground is going to be a little bit squishier And it
or a lot squishier.
And you're going to have a lot of potential for your boots to get wet, and you definitely want to try to keep your feet as dry as possible.
Yeah. I mean, yeah. I think waterproof footwear realistically, I mean, more often than not, again, specifically in the Midwest,
right?
More often than not, I'm going to want waterproof footwear. I mean, mm-hmm. just for like anything, any time of year that you might run across. Now, I know back in our like footwear episode, we talked about, okay, maybe waterproof isn't so good if you're in a hot, dry climate where right. you don't have the moisture considerations that we have here. But like even, I mean, not to pick on those two ladies who we didn't even get their name at the Grand Canyon, but like I would not have thought, like as a Midwesterner, and maybe this is showing like how naive you and I are, but like I would not have thought the Grand Canyon would require waterproof footwear because there right. would be snow on the ground. You know what I mean? Like right. snow and snow melt and all that sort of stuff. I just wouldn't have thought of that.
Right. I mean, and I know at some point, if you're doing the rim to rim or whatever, you do have to cross the Colorado River. I don't know if there is a bridge. I don't know if you just get in the water.
No, my understanding is there's a bridge because I think okay. that is a fairly good sized river. Like, I don't think it's just like I walk across it type
of river. I mean, it didn't look that big from up above. But.
Okay, well, that is a separate episode, friend. Right.
So, but yeah, waterproof footwear, I mean, and make sure you've got footwear that has good traction. If it's getting 100%. A little older or something, it's a little slick, then that might not be the best thing to take.
Yeah. Well, and then if I can just like add on to your waterproof footwear. So I think it was, again, back in that same episode that we talked about, like the footwear episode, or maybe it was the hiking in the rain one. I don't remember. Regardless. Yeah. So this is maybe another good time to have gaiters. So we had talked about gaiters and how neither one of us have really ever used them.
Right.
I could see springtime being a, like if we do wind up going in the next yeah. couple weeks or whatever, that might be a good investment and like a good time to make that purchase, knowing yeah. that the ground is going to be gross. There's going to be mud everywhere. In an effort to keep your boots in better condition and drier in general and to keep some of the mud off of them and all of the things, this might be a good time to do the gaiters.
Yeah, yeah, I agree. If we do plan something, and I think that's going to be something I'm going to look into. Is not look into, but actually purchase. So to piggyback on that, just waterproof jacket and pants. I'm going to say and pants because when we were hiking in the rain, I did not wear waterproof pants and I was soaked. And your waterproof boots don't do you any good if your pants get soaked and that water just drips down your leg into your boot. So I
am on board and I agree with what you're saying. I think that goes into, for me, a larger discussion about just kind of like springtime weather in general.
Well, yeah, you're going to want to keep an eye on the weather.
Well, so, that's what I was going to say. Like we talk all the time about planning, planning, planning. Right. And one of the things that we always preach is like, know what type of weather. The problem with springtime weather, at least where we are, I don't think the forecasts are always super accurate here the springtime.
Yeah.
So like it might say, you know, 10% chance of rain or whatever. In the springtime, 10% is like a good percent. Like, it's probably going to rain.
Right.
Versus, like, maybe the middle of the summer, a 10% chance of rain, you're like, yeah, it's probably not going to rain.
Right.
But that is a, like, weather, and I don't want to jump ahead to, like, a whole thing because I want to talk about weather specifically, too.
Right.
But, like, waterproof everything. I mean, realistically, in the spring, your pants, your jacket, your boots, your gaiters, your, like, even hat and gloves. I'm not going to say it's a terrible idea to have waterproof hat and gloves.
No, not at all. Just like you said, I'm not saying wear the waterproof pants the entire time you're out there. But if it starts to rain, have them on the ready so you can get them on real quick, you know?
Yeah, because like you're saying, I mean, we certainly ran into – I mean, the days that were, it just would not stop raining and we weren't really prepared for that.
Right.
When your pants get soaked, guess what? Everything like down below just, gets soaked too.
Yep. Turns out gravity has that effect on things.
Right.
So.
So then there again is where your gaiters are going to come in handy and like your waterproof boots and all the things. So, I mean, like it all kind of works together.
Yep. Absolutely.
But yeah.
You mentioned hat. So, I mean, bring a hat to help keep, I mean, springtime, it tends to be a little bit sunnier than the wintertime, especially here in the Midwest. So a hat to help keep stuff out of your eyes. But also if it does rain, that helps keep the water away from your face and all that stuff too.
Yeah, and I would even consider, like, I have lightweight beanies.
Yeah.
Like, you and I have gone, not so much in the spring, but in the fall, where you have, like, where it's warm during the day, but, like, your mornings when you're getting started and stuff, it is, like, downright chilly, if not cold, you know?
Right.
As a bald person, like, I like a beanie all the freaking time. Right. But, like, I could definitely see in the springtime. You know, maybe you're not getting down to freezing temps, but if you're getting down into like the 40s or even the low 50s, I don't think it's going to hurt to have a lightweight beanie. You don't need to have like a super heavyweight, like winter beanie.
Right. Well, I mean, if you're out in the middle of the day and it's in the 60s, 70s, in the middle of the day, you're huffing and puffing on the trail, all that stuff. When your core temperature cools down and then the ambient temperature around you also is cooling down, even if it's 10 degrees, that's going to feel significantly colder than when you had your heart rate elevated and your core temperature up. So a lightweight jacket or a puff jacket, something that can help keep you warm that way too, is going to be nice, especially in the springtime.
I know we have those, I guess, what brand are those? 32
degrees. Yep.
Not a sponsor, but we have those like lightweight puffy jackets that like really cinch down and I mean, they don't blow up, but they kind of deflate into a compression sack type thing. They weigh basically nothing.
Yeah. They're warm.
And they are super warm and super comfy. Like they are nice little jackets.
Yeah. And reasonably priced.
Yeah. And I mean, and so then that goes into like the larger conversation. We've kind of been dancing around it all together with like all this stuff, but like layering.
Yeah.
Sounds simple. Sounds like a no brainer, but like realistically, all these things that we're saying, that is what you run into in the spring. So you're going to have your chilly mornings.
Yep.
Then you're going to be warm in the middle of the day. Yep. Then you're going to get to camp and it's going to be chilly again. Like this is the time to have your like layered clothing options.
Right.
Maybe you need a jacket in the morning, but you wouldn't need it in the middle of the day. So have it as a jacket versus wearing like as your main shirt, you know,
pack
a heavy like hoodie or something. Yeah. Like have a jacket that you can remove.
Yeah. Something that's easy on, easy off and easily pack up, in a cinch too, that doesn't weigh a lot.
Yep.
We'll go ahead. Well, since we'll go on, a head net or bug spray, because there's some extra gear per se to take, because the springtime right now in Michigan, we don't have any mosquitoes, but we're getting warmer weather and
I had a mosquito in my house the other day.
You did?
Yeah.
Okay. Well, it's spring.
I mean,
then.
It didn't look all that healthy, but like it was fluttering around, you know, right. Like the first guy that they sent out to like, hey, you should go check it out for us. Yeah.
Right. If you don't come back, it's too soon. Right. But yeah, I mean, we have a little bit of standing water and the temperatures are warming up and stuff. So mosquitoes are going to be out, ticks are going to be out, things like that. So just make sure you take some bug spray and ways to help prevent that.
Bug spray, bug net, long sleeve clothing if needed. Because I mean, you're gonna get your mosquitoes and your ticks, like you're saying. But like realistically, this is when those stupid freaking annoying gnats and stuff start coming out too. Like could be any day now that you're gonna start walking into swarms of them.
Right.
So I mean, I think that's all great gear tips to have: bug net, bug spray, all those things for sure. This is have them on you.
I'm going to let you do the next one because I know you have it on your list.
Is that where we're going next? I was looking at it. Your face as we were like dancing around it. I'm like, oh, he's got this on his list too. So talking about gear, one of the like over and over again things that people say, this is a good time of the year to use your trekking poles.
Yep.
So it is going to be muddy. The trails are going to be slippery. The rocks are going to be slippery. The terrain is going to be, you know, heaved a little bit from the winter and the thaw and all that. So if you have trekking poles and you are the type of person that likes using trekking poles, this is a good time of year to get those out, have them handy, and really use them for like one of the things that they're meant for, which is like your stability stuff.
Yeah.
Listeners of this show will know Mike and I have our like love, hate, whatever you want to call it with trekking poles. I think in the spring I would take mine. Mm-hmm. I'm not saying I would use them all the time, but like I do think this is the time of year to take them.
That's what I was saying. I'll at least have them strapped to my pack, and if I need them, I'll have them available.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, because you're going to be slipping and sliding around a little bit. So, you know, try to mitigate that with trekking poles or whatever your walking stick or whatever your, you know, choice of thing is. This is the time of year to use that if you're going to.
Yeah. The last thing that I have that I might look into, but I don't know if it's going to be necessary, but it's some micro spikes or crampons. I don't think we necessarily need them, but where we were at, they were recommending them in the Grand Canyon when we were there a couple of weeks ago, because in the shaded spots, even like in the hills or mountains or whatever, where the shade hits longer, then that snow is going to be the last to melt. So it'll be icy. So the micro spikes are going to help you grip on those slippery surfaces.
I'm going to agree with that. Like I have worn, not in like my hiking life, but in, so I worked, I was an outside technician for a long time, long story. Anyway, in the winter,
yeah,
I really wore, now I know winter and spring are different, but go with me for a second. So in the winter, I wore those like strap on mini spikes on the bottom of my boots.
Yeah.
All winter long, which I know those are a little bit different than the exact thing that you're talking about, but it is amazing how much more grip you get.
I think what you're talking about spikes are technically the micro spikes. I think that's what those are. Crampons are different, and the crampons
are like the little, they almost look like a spring that you flattened out type thing.
They're more for ice climbers is what I'm like, or really icy conditions. They're metal spikes. They're longer and they have like spikes coming off the toe as well.
Those are the things that like come off the front of your toe. Like, I know what you're talking about.
So, but
that's not what I was thinking, but
yeah, micro spikes are pretty much what you used, when you were a tech.
Yeah.
Yeah, that wrap around your boot.
Like, crazy how much more grip you get with that sort of stuff. So I can for sure see, you know, in the springtime, you're going to have, like, not only are you going to have, like, potentially icy spots, right? Or you're going to have that damp air that just, like, clings to everything and makes rocks slipperier or any of that sort of stuff. But you're going to have, because of all the wetness and stuff, you're going to start having, like, moss or, like, algae-type growth on stuff, which, for anybody that's accidentally stepped on that, like you get on into a shaded spot in your yard and step on a piece of cement that's got like the algae on it or whatever.
Yep.
That shit is slippery.
Yeah.
So I can see the cleats or whatever we're calling them.
Yeah.
I can see them being useful. I kind of get it.
Yeah. So that's something I might look into. The gaiters, I think I'll definitely be buying, but the micro spikes might be something that I just look into in our potential purchase. So.
I know. It's going to depend on how much closer we keep creeping, like, earlier in the year or later in the year. Right. Like, we started solidly doing this in the summer, and we keep extending it, like, every year on both ends a little bit. Yeah. So, yeah, I mean, if we're going to start going earlier in the spring.
Or even later.
None of it's a bad idea to have, or later in the fall.
Yep. For sure. Since we've kind of talked about, well, that's what I've got for the gear stuff. Do you have anything else?
That's kind of what I've got for gear, too. Yeah.
So I guess we could move on to the some of the trail challenges, or kind of the what the we talked about it a little bit. You're going to have the muddy and the wet trails, snow and ice patches, high water levels. So if you're used to a river or a stream being a foot deep or 2 feet deep, expect it to be a little bit deeper, because all of the snow shed or the snow melt is going to increase the water volumes and all that kind of stuff too. So definitely plan for that.
Deeper, faster, and colder. I mean, like, well, really, yeah, the trifecta, sure. Right? Yeah. I mean, because you're going to have, like, any of your snow melt, plus it's been probably frozen all winter anyway, so, well, I mean, it's going to be colder water, it's going to be deeper, and then because it's deeper, it's also going to be faster.
Moving faster, exactly.
And then, with all that, you get more frickin' debris in the water. Mm-hmm. So, you know, definitely, I mean, always be careful with river crossings or stream crossings,
right. But
especially in the spring, can be a little bit more dangerous than it normally would be.
Yeah. Yeah, for sure. We talked about the bug season in the beginning and all that stuff. So I'd be prepared with that, but,
Can we go back to mud for a minute though?
Yeah.
So one of the things that I really wanted to make sure we hit home when we're talking about like muddy trails, which is for sure a thing in the spring,
mm-hmm.
but I really want to take a minute and hit home. We've said it before, but it is worth saying again, stay in the center of the trail.
Like, yes.
Walk through the mud.
Yep.
Stay in the center of the trail.
That's where your waterproof boots come in handy.
This is where your waterproof boots come in. This is where your gaiters come in. It's where all the things come in. But you are supposed to walk through the mud instead of walking around or trying to stay in the dry spots. You're supposed to walk down the center of the trail. We are not trying to widen the trail or divert the course of the trail. Like, stick to the trail, stick to the middle of the trail, get muddy. It's okay.
Right.
Your
right.
stuff will wash.
You know? right, so exactly.
I didn't want to gloss over the muddy Fair trail point. Without taking a minute to say that. I mean, it really does, in the long run, help keep the trails nice and usable for everybody.
For sure. Even if it's, I mean, you know, 6 inches deep of snow, and you could avoid, but if that's where the trail is going, go there. Like, just keep going through it. Like you said, your stuff will dry, your stuff will clean. As you're walking, it'll dry and flop, you know, clump off or whatever. So,
and I want to be clear, like, it sounds like I'm being like super strict about this, and I know I kind of am.
Yeah.
But when you and I are out on the trail, we have to remind each other to do that too. Like, it's not like, cause like your natural instinct is to go around the mud and try to not get muddy and all that. And I get that. And Mike and I are guilty of it. We remind ourselves like, no, go through the mud, stay in the middle of the trail. It's like, oh, okay, yeah, right. You're right. You're right. It is the right thing to do. So I'm not going to say like nobody ever slips up and does the wrong thing. Or sometimes so many other people have, like, gone around the mud, you almost can't tell where the trail is supposed to be and where the trail is not supposed to be, because there's, like, maybe two options. So I don't really know what the right thing to do in that situation is. Like, if there's already an alternative created, I still think you're supposed to probably go through the mud, because that's where the trail probably originally was. You know, use your best judgment, but try to not make it any worse.
Yeah. If going through the mud is an option, but it looks a lot more slick, or it looks like you could get stuck or anything, like, don't do it just because you're supposed to. If it's unsafe or, you know, something, then figure it out to do it safely. But at the same time, if you can do it safely, go through the center.
Well, and I know we're kind of trying to move on from this, but I guess one more thing that I thought of while we're talking about it is, kind of going back to planning, and I know it's not always about planning, but some trails close in the spring. Like, if the mud is too bad or it would be dangerous to be out there, like, some trails do close. So might be worth checking or double checking, is that trail that you're trying to go to even open, or is that section even open when you're trying to go, especially in the springtime?
I have that in a different section, so I wasn't going to bring it up there, but
okay, sorry. Well, I'm jumping ahead, I guess. Sorry.
But yeah, so the last thing I have as far as like the spring trail challenges and things like that is going to be more of the unpredictable weather. Like Sean mentioned that, you know, the 10% rain chance in the spring is a lot higher than the 10% in the middle of summer. But you got to remember that with fluctuating temperatures and everything, if it's calling for rain, it very well could be sleet, freezing rain, or snow.
Right.
You know, so it could be a variation of different precipitation types or anything, and the thunderstorms start to pick up in the spring too.
I was just gonna say that. Yep.
So
yeah, it could very well turn into a like unexpected thunderstorm that you didn't see coming.
Right.
So like, have a plan for that, which could be a thing.
Yeah, all of a sudden the winds pick up, and you know you got to make sure you're trying to stay safe from all of the stuff. I think in a thunderstorm or a lightning storm, you're not supposed to be by a tree.
I know. I feel like that changed since when we were kids. Like I think you are right. You are not supposed to stand underneath a tree, but you're also not supposed to stand out in an open field.
Right.
This might be one of those do your own research on what the proper thing to do if you're like in the backcountry and a thunderstorm rolls in.
Definitely don't be by the tallest tree.
Right. But I mean, to kind of go along with what you're saying though, like it could be sleet, it could be rain, it could hail, it could be a thunderstorm, it could be whatever. One of the things to kind of loop it back to gear too, and layering and waterproof and all that sort of stuff, like hypothermia is a real risk.
Oh, absolutely.
So, you know, again, kind of know what your signs of hypothermia are. Because if you're getting wet and then it's windy and maybe it's sunny, but it's still cold, you know, like all of that contributes to what is your core body temperature doing. And if your core body temperature gets too low, you got all the things. So, you know, that's another consideration to have. Like, are you taking enough warm clothes? Are you taking enough dry clothes that you can change into things? Do you have a plan for all that?
Yeah, it's I don't know. We've been fortunate enough. Well, we did have the day where it was only supposed to rain for an hour, and then it ended up raining all day. So I guess we've been mostly fortunate that our weather forecasts have held up. But again, it's Michigan, so you can't bank on it all the time. That's all I've got for that type of stuff.
I've got maybe like a segue item that might segue into some other things. So, I mean, we're talking about, I don't even remember what topic we're on. We're kind of on trail conditions, right? Like, that's kind of where we started.
Yeah.
So one of the other things to keep in mind, like we've talked about bugs, we've talked about the mud, we've talked about all that sort of stuff. We've talked about the slippery conditions. But this time of year is also when like your quote unquote poison plants are going to start like blooming and really kind of going crazy.
Yep. Poison sumac, oak, all that. Yep.
Poison ivy, poison oak, poison sumac, all those things. Plus the trails probably haven't been used as much as they had been. So like any of that springtime growth, plus your weeds aren't beaten back from trail usage. So like all of it's going to be a little bit closer to the trail than maybe it normally would. So this was a good time to do a refresher on, what does poison ivy look like? What does poison oak look like? What does poison sumac look like? Maybe have a picture downloaded onto your phone. Because, you know, going into the whole, you might not have cell service, but if your phone at least has power, can you double check and see what the leaves of that look like? So if you come across it, you can double check.
I mean, not a bad idea to save a photo of that into your photos or in a folder somewhere on your phone, and that way you can reference it even if you don't have cell signal.
Well, that's what I'm saying, yeah.
Yeah. You probably said it, I just didn't hear it.
I didn't specifically say that, but like, yeah, that's kind of what I'm saying. Like, have it saved on your phone so you can do it.
So another thing too, keeping along with the nature of being in nature, is going to be wildlife is going to start being more active.
Oh, for sure. Yes.
So bears hibernate in the winter time. They're going to be coming out, and they could be a little bit more aggressive than they normally would be. As you know, I'm a little cranky when I just wake up. So,
well, they're just waking up. They're probably hungry as hell. You know, like all the things. Plus, it's like springtime when it's like, I guess I don't know when bear mating season is, but they always say it's like springtime for like mating season, right? You know, so you got like the trifecta. You're hungry, horny, and tired.
Yep. So you're going to be a little pissy. So be mindful of that. We don't have a lot of snakes where we go, or at least we haven't seen a lot of them. So I don't typically worry about that. But they'll be on the move too, more as it warms up. So just be mindful in your area where what wildlife might be waking up and moving about more, and pushing other wildlife out. You know, over the wintertime. I don't know, foxes and things like that, I think they're pretty active in the winter still, so they might go where they don't normally wouldn't if a bear's active too or something, so they might get pushed into a different area.
And you're gonna have like all of the babies, right? So like even moms or whatever are gonna be a little bit more, I'm gonna say territorial, even though I'm not sure that's exactly the right word, because it's, I don't think it's territorial, but it's like protective of their young, right?
Yeah.
So
yeah,
if you accidentally happen upon a bear with cubs, or even like a deer with their babies, or a freaking goose, you know, like Canadian geese aren't always the nicest when you walk up on them unexpectedly. So there's like all those things. Your nature is going to be more active than it has been for several months.
Geese are never nice. They don't even need to have their young. They're just never nice.
Well, I
fucking hate those things. I mean, they're pretty to look at, but I'd hate being near them. Something else to look out for out there is going to be falling debris from trees, from things higher up. Wind is going to be pushing things. Trees are going to start getting their leaves or their buds and everything, and all that crap ends up dropping and stuff. That's going to create some slipperiness on the trail potentially. So the things are going to be falling. You could have loose branches that got weakened over the winter, things
like
that.
That's what I was thinking. Yep.
So especially if there's any ice present or anything like that, if it's still up in the tree wing, then it has more potential to break and everything. So, So that's one that I had. And then another, just a tip for when you get going is to start earlier in the day. It says that the trails are often firmer in the morning because it's still at the low temperature. So
that's funny. I have that on my list too, and it didn't really fit into like neatly into one of the categories we were talking about. I kind of have it just like down safety as a footnote, like don't forget to mention this. safety tips. But sure. Yeah. Like, I mean, it is, and that's true though. I mean, like the ground, you know, if it's gonna get the sun beating on it in the middle of the day and get warm and squishy, try to hit it in the morning before it gets like that, you know?
Right. Yep. So yeah, that's a safety tip that I had, but that's pretty much all I had. I mean, we talked about this has test your stream crossings. We talked about the fast moving water and all that kind of stuff. Something that I didn't think of using trekking poles for though, is testing the depth of the water.
Okay.
You don't step, you know, just test it with your foot. You'd test it with your trekking pole. So that's something. I think ours even have like inch markers.
I do think they have inch markers on them now that you say that. Okay, that makes sense that that's what that would be used for.
I thought it was just like, okay, I like mine at the 40 and like where you set it for how high you want it. But
yeah.
So, but yeah, so there's things with that too. And my notes do say to avoid walking through the mud, but when it says avoid walking through the mud, hike through the center of the trail to avoid widening it. So that's kind of like a contradictory note that I have here, because usually to avoid walking through the mud is you have to go around the mud.
I know. Like, I mean, that's my experience anyway. Usually if there's mud, usually it's the middle of the trail.
Because that's the most used, so it's the deepest part or the softest part of the trail. So any moisture is going to get held up there. So, but yeah, so, but yeah, that's what I've got on my notes here. You got any other, safety tips or,
I mean, the only other thing that I have that didn't really fit into a category, and I feel like we say this all the time, so it's kind of common sense at this point, but obviously stay hydrated. That's always going to be a big thing on the trail. It may not, with the temperatures being weird, you maybe aren't sweating like you normally would, but you also lose a lot of body moisture just by breathing hard.
Oh yeah.
So, you know, like, I guess it's, I just wanted to reiterate just for a safety thing, always make sure you have enough water. Always make sure you have a way to get more water. Mm-hmm. You know, like, just make sure to stay hydrated. And then of course, as always, including in the spring, pack out your trash, take all your stuff with you.
Yep.
You know, all those rules still apply. All your leave no trace still applies. All your other things still apply.
Yeah.
So, you know, be mindful of taking your trash out with you, all that sort of stuff.
With the leave no trace, something that I didn't think about too is, because the ground is a little bit softer and everything, is that the spring trails are more vulnerable to erosion. So just be a bit more mindful, and that's where you really want to stay into the center of the trail too, is mm-hmm. is that, just that it is more susceptible to breaking down than in the middle of the summer in a dry condition.
Yeah.
I do have the respect your trail closures. You mentioned it earlier. If somebody has gone out of their way to go into the woods and mark a trail closed, yes. there is a reason for that, and it's for your safety.
Well, it's for your safety. It's for the preservation of the trail. It's for like any number of things. I guess I didn't even think that we should probably say that, but you're right. If it's closed,
it's somebody for a reason. It. Right. Like, somebody went out there.
Yeah.
So, like,
it's not just because they're trying to ruin your day.
Sometimes the closure will be at a trailhead. So it's not that they had to go real far to go out there and close it. But sometimes you get to a junction and you're like, I was planning on taking the left because it's only 3 miles. Whereas if I take a right, then it's going to be 6 miles. But the left fork is closed that way. So then you do have to do the 6 miles or something, but
yeah. And I guess that's, I mean, we didn't say it specifically, but you know, obviously take a map with you all the time. Yeah. And that's, if a segment is closed, like, just know that that could be a thing. Like, you might get out there and have like, okay, you're planning, like Mike's saying, you're planning on going A to B to D, but maybe you get out there and B to D is closed. So you got to go to B to C to D, or whatever, you know, like the long way around, and you weren't planning on. So leave yourself like that buffer room in your timing, that buffer in your like mileage that you wanted to go in a day. Those trail closings could happen, and you might not have any advanced warning until you get out there,
right,
that it's closed. So just be, you know, be adaptable on the fly with what your plan
is. It's not like each of these trails has a Facebook page and you can go check what's closed and what's open, anything like
for
that.
For sure. So, yeah, for sure.
One last thing I have on trail etiquette type stuff is to clean your gear. It says to make sure you wash your boots or your poles after you hike, because the mud can spread invasive species. And therefore, you want to not bring that into another ecosystem that's not used to that.
Good. That is a good tip. I didn't really think about that, but that is a good tip. Another tip related, kind of, sort of, just from a keeping Mike's car nice and neat and clean. One of the tips that Mike and I do, especially if we know it's going to be muddy where we're going, is we take giant, giant trash bags to put all of our stuff in when we get back to the vehicle so that it is not getting his car all super disgusting and muddy.
I mean, realistically, the muddy and disgusting is a perk to that. My wife made me start doing that because she thought I was going to be covered in ticks when I got back.
So is a possibility.
Which is a possibility. So in the car, I have a change of clothes because she makes me do a tick check before I even get in the car. So I got it's just a whole thing. But yeah, so Garbage bags for sure. That will help keep any of those invasive species in there as well. And then just wipe it all down, wipe it all off, throw it away, and get rid of it.
Mike and I find that those like giant black contractor garbage bags that you can get from like the Home Depot or whatever your local hardware store is, like they will fit all of your stuff in there. Yep. Like, you can put your whole backpack in there, tie it all up, deal with it when you get home.
Well, and if the trailhead has it, I mean, we've all seen those, the boot cleaner scrubby things.
Cleaners, like, prevent hitchhikers or whatever. Yeah,
make sure you're using those when you get back. It might not clean your boots, but at least they're there for a reason, too. So make sure you're using those if they're available.
Yep.
So what else do you have for trail etiquette? Or have you exhausted your research?
That is the end of my notes that I took of things that I wanted to discuss. So did you have anything else on your list that we needed to hit?
Yeah, I'll end your suspense here. We talked about it a little bit before, but I came up with found a few things of why spring hiking is worth it.
Okay.
The first thing that I came across is, especially for you and I, where we say we don't like people, the springtime is going to have fewer people on the trails. They're often less busy in the spring. People usually wait for the warmer weather, the drier weather, things like that. So you'll have fewer crowds.
Mm-hmm.
Another benefit is going to be wildflowers and new growth. Earlier the year, you got fresh greenery. That's one of my favorite things about spring is when you look out the window and suddenly not everything is that disgusting brown color when the green starts popping through and everything. So I can only imagine what it's like out on the trail.
You mentioned it smells really pretty, too.
I'm sure it smells different. I mean, being out in the backcountry smells, I don't know if I want to say pretty, but it's definitely different than being at home.
Right.
So it's, but I bet you you're right though, with all the different blossoms and things like that popping through, it probably does smell a lot prettier. The one thing we mentioned it earlier is, the cooler temps. If you're like me, I'm not a hot weather person. So mid 60s during the day is perfect for me. I know that's not a favorite thing for everybody.
I'm a hot weather guy, so I'll take the hotter weather. I mean, teach their own.
The last one that I didn't even think of would be a thing to think about, but if you have rivers or waterfalls or anything like that, the springtime is the time to go see those because all that extra runoff from the snowmelt and everything means that those are running faster. They have more water, so they are going to be prettier.
I didn't even think of that.
Yeah. So, like,
I mean, I thought of the rivers being faster, but I didn't think about, like, your,
like, waterfalls
or, like, your,
or any kind of, you know, ripples, rapids
or whatever. Yeah. Totally makes sense.
So, those are some things if you've got those in your area and you usually see them in a drier time, maybe try the spring and see if it looks different. So.
All right. So. Well, that's all I got. Did you have anything else you wanted to touch on?
No, just again, be mindful, leave no trace, and do your extra prep if you're going to go out in this time of year because it's different than going in the summer.
Yeah, for sure it is. Mm-hmm. If any of our listeners have any spring hiking tips or any pieces of gear that they find that are really helpful in the spring, or any layers of clothing that they can't go without, please feel free to share those recommendations with us. We would love to hear them. You can always reach us on our email, which is seanmikehike@gmail.com. You can reach us directly on our website, which is seanmikehike.com, or on most of the major socials at seanmikehike. Please rate, review, and subscribe wherever you're listening to this podcast. And until next time, go take a hike.
Go take a hike in the springtime.
There you go. All right. Thanks, everybody. We'll see you in a couple weeks. Yep.